just been one thing after another.
I definitely know the feeling, man.
Trying to get just everything done before the next project finds itself. And
because once stuff overlaps,
yep,
something's going to happen. Something's going to be left behind or not done right.
So it's cool you found these old Fangorias.
Funny because I was going through the box and I was like, I used to have that issue. Like, I used to buy them all the time at the neighborhood convenience store.
Build a boneyard in your backyard with Grave Creations. Gore Prosthesis. Torn Cheek, 1025. Open Cut, 840. Ugh. You nucleated eye.
You have all your tombstones you can buy in different styles.
Oh, man. 1989 catalog available in June. So this stuff wasn't even cheap back then.
Right.
That's awesome.
So it's always good about having my jigsaw.
All right, so here we are. How's it going, man?
Not too bad, man. Not too bad. Just, you see in the background, we got Serpent and the Rainbow going. I finally acquired my VHS copy of that, which I've been looking for a long time. And shout out to the fellow NOA member, Andy Gonzalez. He dug it up for me. And
nice.
He's been keeping an eye out. Love this movie, man.
Well, it's the perfect theme for episode number 14. In which we're going to talk about voodoo.
Yes, I was just thinking the same thing, man. It opens up with a voodoo priest in full top hat and everything doing his dance. So
let's talk about some voodoo. But first, we're going to talk about the history segment. This episode drops on January 16th of 2017. That is a Monday. So I realize, like, maybe it's very possible that yesterday or the day before was somebody like Stephen King's birthday or, you know, whatever, but since these drop on Mondays, unless it happened on that date, you know,
yeah, we don't discuss
it. Well, we might discuss it, but not as a part of the history segment. So, the 16th of January is a pretty important date in history. This date in history, in 27 BCE, Octavian is granted the title Augustus by the Roman Senate, marking the beginning of the Roman Empire. So, that was, you know, started a... They were already pretty violent, but
right,
that Roman
right.
Empire was a pretty, yeah, they, pretty
well,
brutal...
The thing about it is that they were egomaniacs, you know. As far as they were concerned, they were the end-all, be-all. Kind so of, they felt they could do whatever they wanted to, you know.
Sounds kind of familiar. 1547, on this date, Ivan the Terrible becomes the Tsar of Russia. So, we got to have some regime change going
yes.
on in history. And in, bad news, on this date in 1919, the United States ratifies the 18th Amendment authorizing prohibition. It was actually repealed on January 5th, 1933, and a couple episodes back when Chris and I were doing the Krampus episode,
mm-hmm.
we marked the end of prohibition with a nice shot. So tonight, Scotty and I are drinking water, so we're not, we're prohibiting the alcohol on this Monday night.
The government can't tax it, they want to prohibit it. That's just the way it is.
<That's> it. So, hey man, notable births this year, or this date in history, 1948. We got John Carpenter.
Nice.
John Carpenter of Halloween, The Fog, Escape from New York, Starman, Christine, The Thing, Big Trouble in Little China, Prince of Darkness, They Live, and In the Mouth of Madness.
Yes.
So,
I was discussing In the Mouth of Madness with some guys last night. They had never heard of the movie before. I love it, dude.
Back when that came out, I pretty much had read just about everything Lovecraft had written.
Mm-hmm.
And when I remember seeing the trailer for that movie and was just shocked.
Well, the trailer is nothing. Once you see the movie, that's when it's a trippy movie.
Well, yes. I know the trailer was nothing, but I saw the Lovecraft references within the trailer. So I was like, whoa, they're actually making a movie outside of Reanimator.
Right.
You know, because Lovecraft stuff is very thick. And it's very bleak, and it's not particularly scary. It's real cerebral, so
mm-hmm.
it's kind of difficult to make an effective movie out of it. Because everything's undescribable, and, you know, happened millennia ago and stuff.
There's a lot of books like that, too, that, you know, there's those books that I hope they never make a movie of, because there's no way you can make a movie long enough to get the same experience that you have from the book.
Right.
It wouldn't be possible.
That's you know, it's got, it's not with Lovecraft, but it's one of those issues that when they're remaking it into a movie, a standalone movie, and the miniseries was like 6 hours long,
right?
And they just kind of touched the high points, you know, because that book is, you know, very, very long.
Yeah.
Excuse me, but you know, but the miniseries did a really good job. But I don't know how you could condense a like 1,400-page book to 6 hours of video, and then condense it further to an hour and a half, 2 hours of.
You know, when you speak about that, Weave World, which is one that I always reference on that topic, is a it's a great book by Clive Barker. Probably my favorite Clive Barker book, to be honest with you. And but it's so long; it would require three movies to do book justice. And that actually would be kind of cool to do a series, a 3-season series on that book. That would be pretty kick ass, man. Because it's a great book. I mean, but there's so much detail and just description in the book.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't do it in a movie, man.
Well, and they're talking. Well, now that Joseph Gordon-Levitt has left the project, I'm not sure, but. With a couple of Neil Gaiman's books, so like American Gods is coming out on as a series soon. Mm-hmm. And it's a long book, but it's very detailed, and a single movie wouldn't do it justice. And they were going to do a single movie of The Sandman, but it would almost have to go to television,
right? Because, like you do with Preacher,
right? Where you know because the second graphic novel, The Doll's House, is so complex and weaves such a thick, you know, narrative that sets up for the whole rest of the series, mm-hmm. but it's the heart of the entire series.
Right.
And that in and of itself would be a whole season of television.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like 10 issues
okay.
of the comics. So they were going to do a standalone, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt was on board, and then he dropped out, and now it's kind of in limbo, but I would hope that they go to TV with something like that,
because
right. it's just too much.
Yeah, it's like Weave World is separated into three novellas, so I mean it's three totally different books almost, so it would be perfect to do as a season, because you got everything is set up in the book to have a season ender, mm-hmm. and then you got your season opener right when the next novella starts, so that'd be an excellent way to do it. I might see about producing that.
put that on my
calendar real quick.
Call up Clive. Hey, Clive.
Got an idea. The Women of Crystal Lake, and it's not a Playboy pictorial. That is one of my favorite Friday the 13th images right there.
Yeah, that's a good one right there.
Let me throw on this nasty bloody sweater of this woman whose head was cut off and pretend to be her for her son that's trying to kill me.
Mm. Fun, fun, fun.
Oh, I did find a Nika Sackhead Jason.
Oh, really?
Yes. It's a store in Pasadena that has it, so I might take a ride. I couldn't buy it Saturday when I started the show, but...
Was it 18-inch?
No, it was a small one. It was a little 10-inch.
That's cool.
But yeah, it was real cool, man. I had never seen that one before. So it's definitely going to be a future purchase.
Well, let's get into the heart of the episode.
Yes.
Today we're going to talk about voodoo and all that entails. And it's kind of interesting, the approach that Scotty and I are going to take the concept of voodoo. I'll start by saying, like, New Orleans is one of my favorite places ever, or just on the planet. The music, the food, the atmosphere. It's always, if it's not my primary destination, it's always the backup.
Mm-hmm.
So when the wife is planning and she's like, what do you want to do for vacation? Do we want to go to Mexico? Do we want to go to Europe? What if costs get out of hand? What if we can't figure out something? There's always New Orleans, and that's always going to make me just as happy as anything else. New Orleans has that whole allure, that atmosphere, that, you know, just deep Southern, you know, haunted feel. You know, Anne Rice.
It's an old city.
You know. Anne Rice did a lot of, you know, brought a lot of that up with the vampires and stuff like that. But, I mean, it really does have its own feel.
One thing I recommend next time you go is the plantation home where they filmed a lot of that movie. It's open for tours. It's okay. O'Cali Plantation. I highly recommend you go check it out.
We were just talking earlier. My wife and I celebrate our dating anniversary. So, we started dating in January of 2004.
Mm-hmm.
So every January we take some kind of small little weekend trip, just okay. kind of it's a adult day. We take like an overnight. We don't book it out as an anniversary right. sort of thing, but we always do like a. So she's like, you know, I'd always try to get her. Funny story. You've heard of the Myrtles
yeah.
plantation?
Yeah.
So I got a buddy I was in a band with for a long time, and he's actually from New Orleans, and so is his wife. They both are transplants. They both live here now, but they're both from there. And so driving back and forth to New Orleans on a weekend is not anything for them. I've known him for, you know, 12, 13 years. And well, anyway, she's real big into like paranormal stuff and he's not so much. And so they went to the Myrtles and they came back and they were telling us about it. And it was the four of us sitting there. And I was like, man, I want to do this. Like, I want to go. My wife's not real big on the paranormal at all. Like, she believes in it. She doesn't want to play with it. Right. She doesn't want to go into haunted houses.
She saw that movie one too many times.
Right. So I told her, you know, I'm like, oh, man, I want to go spend the night in the Myrtles. And Aaron, so my buddy Dennis, his wife, was like, oh, the four of us should all go. And my wife, no lie, who's normally kind of, I wouldn't want to say jealous, but she's definitely not, you know, she's like, if you and Aaron want to go spend a night in a haunted hotel, you go right ahead and I'll go shopping in town or whatever. And I stopped her and I was like, do you realize what you just said, right? she's like, I don't care. I'm not going to go in there. But anyway, today she's like, you know, I've been thinking about it. That might be something cool to do. So I think after all these years, I kind of brought her around. So
right.
I'd like to.
Well, you got a chance to do the experience. Why not go ahead and take it, see what happens?
So, but, you know, I've, like I said, I love New Orleans. I've got a couple of voodoo dolls. We always end up going to, like, the Laveau's House of Voodoo mm-hmm. off the, but, kind of with the whole authentic New Orleans voodoo doll that's made in China.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those tourist shops in and around the quarter and stuff are all selling the same stuff.
Yeah.
You know, there does have a feeling of there's the tourist voodoo and then there's the actual way things really are
right.
by the people who live
deeper
deeper outside of the quarter
right.
or, you know, rural Louisiana. So you're from rural Louisiana.
Yes,
so what's the real story? How is it?
Well, you know, my family lineage goes back pre-Louisiana Purchase, being in Louisiana. They you know, way back. So there's a lot of tradition that goes along. You know, voodoo has some roots in Catholicism, and, you know, is real strong Catholic foundation in South Louisiana has always been. And most of the voodoo type stuff that I had experiences with were essentially it was cures for illnesses and stuff like that. Which there was some really wackadoo stuff. If you had an ear rake, they blew smoke in your ear. I had an aunt and an uncle that were both where they
What kind of smoke?
Cigarette smoke. Tobacco smoke.
But that would actually kind of work.
It would help. It would help. But the oddest one that would always work is whenever I get a sprained ankle or some kind of injury, we go to my aunt. If it was something more serious, we go to my uncle. But she was what is called it's going to sound like I'm saying traitor, but I'm saying the French version of treater. They would treat people. Mm-hmm. And what they would do is they would make the sign of the cross about a million times over whatever was hurting you. And they'd mumble this weird prayer that you could not hear. To this day, I have no idea what she was saying. And they would do it for about, she would do it for about 5 or 10 minutes straight. She just didn't move, didn't say anything. She'd use her thumb, make the sign of the cross. And by the time she was finished, it wasn't hurting anymore.
Oh, wow.
Now, the uncle that I had, he was a little bit more up there when it came to that type of treating. People would come from all over the country, man, just to get him to pray over him. And, I mean, people with, like, some serious diseases. You know, they had people that had claimed that he had helped them with their cancer, all kinds of stuff. And it was freaky stuff, man. He didn't charge any money to anybody. People would donate stuff to him all the time. He had a farm. They'd give him free tires. You know, they would just do things for him and everything just to keep him going. But he did this to the day he died, man. He got to the point where so many people were coming to him from across the country. He had to build a building in front of his house with a waiting room. Because just all day long, it's all he would do is pray over people.
And he was a healer, like a voodoo healer. Like that's what he was known.
Yeah, so he was known. He was known as somebody. He'd go and he'd mumble whatever prayer he was mumbling over whatever was hurting somebody, and wow. They almost would go away. It Yeah, it was pretty wild. And there's some other stuff that we always screw up in. And I brought there's a book called Gumbo Yaya. I remember getting a long time ago. Just a lot of things that you hear about. You know, I always wanted to find out if they were actually true. What the basis of these beliefs are for. I've talked about some of them here. There's the Kushma demon that I talked about, which has a has a history of the way to explain sleep paralysis. You know, ooh, there's different things, and some of the little spells and everything that you can use. One thing that you always learn is, especially when it comes to the black magic, the darker stuff, anything you do to somebody is going to happen back on you.
Right.
Whether it be, you know, equivalent or twice fold. And I know someone who who once tried something to, they wanted to stop the involvement of their dad with his secretary. So that particular instance, unfortunately, I'm the one that told her what to do. She was able to get some hair from the woman and placed it underneath a candle that she burned overnight. And the next day, the woman was gone out of their life pretty much. You know, she quit her job, was only working there. But at the same time, their dad and mom almost getting a divorce behind it.
Wow.
So, you know, while what she wanted to happen, something definitely bad happened to her that she didn't want to have. So that was an interesting one. But yes, if you want to get rid of somebody in your life or bring some harm to them, just grab some hair and burn it underneath a candle. A black candle.
It's the intent too. I mean, it's that energy you put out in the universe.
Right.
Because actually that book, Gumbo Yaya, it's I looked into it as well whenever I got a book, and it's, you know, Voodoo in New Orleans, and the writer is Robert Talent, who's one of the writers of Gumbo Yaya.
Mm-hmm.
And he does if you've read Voodoo in New Orleans.
No, I haven't.
Essentially, it's just kind of it's as best as a white journalist in the 1950s was able to do an objective kind of investigative report on voodoo as a both religion and as a cultural phenomenon.
Right, and I'm sure people weren't very open to having him come in and ask questions and stuff. So.
Well, that was the thing, was he interviewed a lot of people, but he would always, inside the book, he has, you know, that he was not able to tell whether or not he was being
bullshitted,
right. But he did the best he could and explained how, like, you know, basically the history of voodoo and how, you know, basically there was kind of two factions. There was the African faction and the Haitian faction.
Yeah.
And the the African was a little more benign because it was, the best way to describe it was that the Haitians were angry.
Crazy, dude.
Well, they were angry, and theirs was kind of more like their form of voodoo was almost a direct mirror against Catholicism.
Yeah.
Because they were enslaved by, you know, and so basically whatever the religion of their
captors were,
of their slave masters was, they were holding a mirror up. So if, you know, the white people worshiped the light, then the voodoo, Haitian voodoos, went for the darkness, and,
right.
And the African was a little less. I want to say sinister. It wasn't as dark.
Yeah, it wasn't as dark.
It was more of a, you know. So the African ones that came directly from Africa into the ports in New Orleans and you know, basically the South, you know, Florida, wherever,
mm-hmm.
And the practitioners of voodoo were less, you know, dark,
yeah,
than the Haitians. And so, and then once they all intermingled and then they adopted parts of Catholicism, it kind of all coalesced.
Well, one thing that
you
noticed,
so that's what kind of you have when you said like the intent of the black magic and stuff, like you had some of the healers, even where people would go to the healers and ask them to help them do something, and the healers would offer probably what might be best described as a curse, mm-hmm. in, you know.
We see, the thing about it is, just like a serpent in a rainbow, with the Haitians and that side of voodoo, it was more of a power thing. It was a way to get control by using voodoo. Because, I mean, the main part of that movie is, you have the leader of the secret police. He's using it to take people's souls over and to control them. And that's why they try to run the scientists out of the country, because they don't want him taking away their magic.
Right.
And, you know, it was a that was the dark side of it, is they wanted to use it as a way of control. You know, in the African side, it was more just, we want to state ourselves, do our thing, but coexist with everybody at the same time.
For them, it was more of a way to cope.
Right, right.
As opposed to a way to rebel.
Yeah.
Which I don't hold, I would have been on the darker side of that myself.
Right.
Like, you know, like, I'm your slave. Find me any kind of poisonous whatever I can do to
to take care of itch. And you know, it goes along with the movie Crossroads and so many other movies. It's pretty much it goes with that dark side where I'll do something for you, but I get something in return.
Mm-hmm.
And what I get in return is going to be a lot worse than what you could have imagined. Trust me.
Right.
And you know, that was a lot, big part of the dark side. Grigri, which was another one that there's different types of Grigri you could throw on somebody, but that's essentially just any kind of curse to bring somebody bad luck. And there's different Grigis, whether you spit on somebody's shoes, or you know, you take some of their hair and you carry it in your own little pouch. There's different ways you can do Grigri too.
Is that all curse, or is that like good and bad?
It's
like
a bad curse. Grigri, there's no good Grigri.
There's no good.
If somebody puts Grigri on you, it's a bad thing.
Okay.
And then there's some wackadoo stuff, which I love. That's one of the things I love about this Gumbo Yaya book, is there's stuff that apparently happened a long time ago, but by the time I came around, they kind of realized that this was kind of stupid to do. But to get rid of a neighbor, one of my favorite ones, is to kill a chicken and throw it over the roof of his house. And I got to say, if I start finding dead chickens in my backyard, I'm going to take it as a sign to move. So mm-hmm. It probably worked real well for a long time.
Years and years ago, some kid I knew, his dad had a book, like it was basically a magazine, like a college magazine from the 60s. And it was one of those neo-anarchist, you know, Abby Hoffman type mm-hmm. people. Same thing. He's like, oh, you know, it's like, go to the store and buy a chicken and put it on top of their air conditioner intake in the hot sun, you know, and it'll ruin their air conditioner. I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah, that'll make somebody mad.
Like, this is another one, just to make someone move, take the hair off a dead black cat and fill its mouth with lemons that have been painted with melted wet wax crayon, and then wrap the animal in silver and foil. Repeat what you want to happen over it, and then bury it under the house of the person you want to move.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty, and the thing about it is, you know, if I find a bald-headed dead cat with lemon stuffed in his mouth under my house, he'll take it as a sign that somebody doesn't want me around.
Somebody, yeah. that's worse than lobbing a complaint with the HOA. Whoa.
I might try this one, actually. I forgot about this one. To silence an owl, because I have owls around here that sound like banshees screaming in the wind. Place a shovel in the fireplace. Squeeze your wrist tightly or turn your pocket the wrong side out. Never mock an owl. And, you know, it's one thing I remember is owls, growing up, I can't believe this just popped in my head. It's so vivid all of a sudden. Owls were considered very mystic type creatures. And a lot of people say that owls, they carried the soul of people that had died. And I remember my dad died when I was 9. An owl, right before he passed away, an owl showed up at the house. I'm talking 2 weeks before he passed away. And he died, and an owl still hung around for a while. And we moved to another house. And the same owl showed up at the house eventually.
Oh, wow.
And hung out there for a long time. I used to ride around with an owl feather. It fell off an owl. I never believed in killing owls. And I had in my car, just as a way just to keep me safe. But owls have a very, very, you know, just mystic persona mm-hmm. in South Louisiana. They're cool as hell. I love owls, man.
Oh, yeah. When I was a kid growing up, my grandfather really liked owls. He had, like, little owl figurine that sat on his dashboard mm-hmm. in his car, and he had a couple, you know, just random owls here and there, like little figurines and stuff in his office and
right.
stuff. Always thought they were really neat. And then somewhere along the line, you know, they got my grandparents, they kind of flitted from hobby to hobby, and unfortunately one of the hobbies that they got into kind of when I started becoming a teenager or whatever was, they got religious. They found Jesus. And unfortunately, instead of joining their kind of local Presbyterian church, they got into that kind of like, charismatic faith stuff where they speak in tongues and
yeah.
they do kind of like faith healing and
yeah, that, laying hands on,
you know, that kind of stuff. And, then of course everything was the devil. I mean, you remember,
Waterboy.
Bobby Boucher's mom yeah, and Waterboy. It was like everything was like everything was the devil.
Anything fun or good.
Anything at all. If you had a cough, I gotta clear my throat. You know, oh, that's a you know, there's a demon on your shoulder and stuff. And I think I told you a long time ago that, well, I told the podcast, you know, when we first started hanging out, how I got somebody tried to cast a demon out of me once.
Yeah, yes.
Well, that was actually my grandmother. And I can't remember exactly why, what her problem was. But basically, what happened was, it was like Easter, and everybody had gone to church. And for whatever reason, the kids hung back. Like, so my sister and I hung back with my grandmother. My other sister wasn't born yet. And she uses an opportunity to try to proselytize and tell us, you know, how we were going to go to hell and this and that. We weren't being raised right and this, that, and the other thing. And the funny thing was, at the time, I was quite, you know, we were active in our church where we live. Mm-hmm. So the stuff she was telling me, I knew. It's like, the Bible doesn't say that. Like, Jesus never said that. Like, you're just kind of, you know, I was probably like 11 or 12, but, you know, in my 11 or 12 year old brain using different languages, I'm like, you're just pulling this out of your ass, you know, like, so I wasn't listening. And there came a point where I just stopped listening and was just like,
let him ramble.
And she started clapping her hands and commanding the demon that was blocking my ears to come out. And I just like rolled my eyes and left. You know, like I didn't leave. I was stuck in the house. I was 11 years old, but, you know,
I left the room,
went in the other room, and, you know, played with G.I. Joes. My folks came home, and, you know, I didn't really say much until we were on the road home, because I didn't want to cause a big fight, you right. know. But, yeah, so, but that was a long way around.
Christ compels you.
That was a long way around. So, you know, my dad was pointed out, it's like, do you realize that if there had been a demon, she was probably not qualified to perform an exorcism.
He, you know, real bad, really quick.
He was one of those that, like, you know, he didn't want to, like, disrespect too much, but at the same time, he's just like, there's people who, like, go to college to learn how to do that. Like, you can't just be, you know.
Like, I got this.
People go to, like, seminary.
Citizen's exorcism.
Yeah. So, but anyway, she, when, but yeah, so owls were a bad thing. They were a bird of the night. They were evil.
Okay.
So he got rid of all his owls. But then recently, when I went down there, he had his owls back out.
So but he's happier now.
He pulled them out and he had them back up on the shelves.
Yeah, back home, owls were a very good thing. They were a sign of luck. I got three of them in my yard right now, so we'll see how much luck they bring. The things are huge.
They kill rats.
Well, that's why I have a daughter.
They kill rats and snakes.
When my daughter saw the owl, she's like, I guess we can't have a cat. I was like, no, we're not going to have a cat here because he would not last very long. I see him catching stuff all the time on the side of the house over here. They are wild. Okay. Some other little taboos that you should avoid, which is some of them are you may have heard before, some of them maybe not. Do not raise your foot higher than your head, ever.
What if you need to kick a ninja?
Then you're out of luck. Punch him. Your hand can go wherever you want it to go.
Wow.
Let me see. Never sweep a porch after sundown. And this is interesting because I remember my mom would sweep every day. She never swept after sundown.
Does it say why?
It'll bring you bad luck, essentially, is what it's saying.
Okay.
These different things. Never break a broom handle. I don't know what the deal is with brooms. Brooms have always been something of. Things happen with brooms. Jump in the broom whenever you get married, that kind of thing. You know, I'm sure you've heard that saying before. Never set your bed crossways of the world. So always be east to west. Whether it be your head in the east or your head in the west, always go east to west with your bed. Think about how yours mine isn't.
Oriented, but I hear at least several dozen to a couple hundred people, depending on when they're picking up this episode. All of them are going to have that same look that I just did.
Looking up, eyes rolled a little bit. And this one I actually do recall. A lot of older houses and buildings, I've seen this actually happen, is never entirely remove an old house if you're building a new one in the same spot.
I've heard that as well.
And I mean, I've seen churches where they still keep the old altar, but it's not the one they use. It's kind of in the back. I've seen houses where they keep, you know, whether it be a chimney or just something from the old house, it's still in the yard. But yeah, I've actually seen that a whole bunch of times. And I think that just has to do with this, you know, people who feel as though houses have spirits, the people that have lived there before.
Right.
And if you remove, you know, where they live and they have no, nothing that they can remember by, or, you know, or that feels comfort, gives them comfort, then you're going to have issues with the spirits in that old house. So I do actually remember seeing that a lot when I was younger. But yeah, it definitely has some deep roots in Louisiana. It's a way of life.
Do you still get back there pretty often? Or?
Not as often as I'd like to. Mainly, I just go see my sisters every once in a while. I'll go back for funerals and stuff. And unfortunately, just there's no time. Recently, went back home for the gumbo cook-off. Went back to my hometown, which is a lot of fun.
That might be a traveling episode of the Scary Dad Podcast.
It should be. That is a very. I highly recommend the gumbo cook-off in my hometown.
I mean, like I said, I've got family originally from the Louisiana area. And so, like everybody's family, my you know, it goes from east to west and stuff. But, you know, my last name's Stewart. I'm directly related to the Confederate general Jeb Stuart.
Okay,
he was killed in the Civil War. His family in Virginia fled to Texas. They fled west because they didn't want to deal with, you know. I've got family, Stewart family, that was here in Texas. It's my dad's mother's folks who were from Louisiana, the Denby side, that were from Louisiana, that fled from Louisiana so they could get married. And then my grandmother met my grandfather, you know, here in Houston. My grandfather's from Iowa.
Okay.
You know, he went, which completely off subject. My grandfather was in World War II at the very tail end, right before, either right before or right after, I think it was right before Hiroshima. And he was, did some stuff in Japan. He experienced some horrifying things, and he never talked about it until after my grandmother died, because she was of the opinion that the stuff that he had to witness and do was so horrible that it should just be buried. But he wanted to exorcise those demons, so he wrote what essentially is like a confession, almost like, this is my story. And it'll like tear your heart out.
Man, I was reading an article this morning about some of the war crimes that occurred by the Japanese during World War, and it was some pretty insane stuff, man.
Yeah, and so that'll be an episode in the future. I need to talk to him, make sure he's, you know,
okay with it.
I don't think he'd mind. I think he wants it published, but I got to clear it. But it's rough. Like,
I mean, there was Nazi level stuff being done. You know,
they were
with
worse.
The Japanese.
They were worse in a lot of ways.
But just not to the scale.
But anyway, so, you know, kind of got off. But, you know, said, you know, New Orleans, Louisiana in general. Like, pretty much as soon as I hit that border, heading east, you know, I'm like, oh, this is where I like to be.
It's such an old state with a lot of tradition. You know, my family started off in Fort Toulouse, Alabama. It was a general, Jean-Louis Fontenot, who came over from France. He was with the French army. And when the United States kind of took over that area, then he packed up his 16 kids and his wife and moved over to Louisiana. And they, I want to say he had 12 sons. And they all settled in different parts of Louisiana. And then Spanish came over, and that was kind of miserable for a while. And then Napoleon took it over, and everybody was, yay. And then he needed some money. So he sold to the United States, and everybody was kind of, at that point, they just said, screw it, we'll just stay here.
You know, stop bouncing around.
And so, yeah, there's a lot of old tradition. I mean, just there's no way you can't have, you know, spirits in that state, because it's just for all the things that have been happening for so many years and the intermingling of cultures. You know, I have family, I'm three generations removed from Indian Reservation, and just all the stuff that went along with that, because, you know, before Louisiana Purchase, there were free people of color in Louisiana. And once the United States took it over, they still had slavery, but you still had all these free people of color that, you know, you couldn't have them as slaves. Mm-hmm. And they just kind of moved in with the Indians. And, you know, the Creole culture, the French Creole culture and that Indian culture kind of intertwined with itself, you know, and influences from Haiti started coming over through slavery and everything. And it, that's when it really just expanded and mm-hmm. just tradition and superstitions and everything started intermingling. And that's where some of the Catholic part of the voodoo culture kind of intermingled itself and intertwined. And it, it's some interesting stuff, you know, just even with Mardi Gras, you know, a lot of people have their idea of what Mardi Gras is. To me, Mardi Gras is the Catholic holiday. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't look at it like that. You know, it's old school country Mardi Gras doesn't have anything to do with flashing your boobs for beads.
Right.
You know, it's all about food, and it's actually a way of just having as much excess as possible before Lent.
Correct.
That way you get all out your system and everything, you know, do all your craziness and then get ready to give something up for Lent.
Well, and that's, I was going to say, because my, the, but what is the, like you said, the Mardi Gras and the Catholicism scene, one of those things that it's this way pretty much everywhere that Christianity has been, is that for the most part, except for like Christianity and Islam, they're the ones that are exclusionary of the other religions so much as everybody else just accepts them as something else.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I read this that like the Mongols, for example, Genghis Khan, in Mongol culture, they had already been exposed to Islam and Christianity and Hinduism, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. they had their step gods that they followed, you know, like their tribal whatever. But whenever they came across a different religion, they'd be like, oh, well, you know, they'd be like, well, they would respect it in such a way that they were like, okay, well, if we're in like Christian territory, then we'll follow kind of Christian traditions because it would be help to have that God on our side in these battles. But they would just flip-flop based on where they happen to be and what they happen to be doing. It's when, so like when you're talking about with voodoo, they're like, okay, well, we can do black magic and curses and white magic and healing and all this other stuff and the rosary.
Right.
We'll just cover all of our bases. we'll gather it all up and kind of mishmash and just, so a lot of times when you have people that are strictly Christian and they look at other religions as, you know, that's exclusionary. You can't do those things.
Right. Well, it's also a matter of Islam and Christianity, a lot of branches of Christianity, I'm not going to say it is an entire, I'm not going to paint it with a broad brush, but they feel as though their religion is the right one.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I have religious discussions, I always bring up Conan the Barbarian. There's a scene where Conan meets the archer, the guy with that he saves from the witch.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about gods. And the other one was like, what god do you pray to? And he goes, my god is the god of the winds. And Conan's like, my God, they accept the existence of each other's gods.
Right.
That one exists and one doesn't. They understand that more than one God can exist and people can have more than one religion.
Well, and that's the thing is, like bringing the Mongols, Genghis Khan went somewhere and they're like, oh, you know, God this and God that. And he's like, well, you must have done something really bad for your God to send a curse such as me your way. Like, I accept your God. I also accept that your God sent you me to punish you. So, you know, you're not going to convert me. I'm not going to change my... I'm still going to kill you. don't worry about it. Like, I picture Genghis Khan a lot like Negan in The Walking Dead. And he's just, you know, he's going to kill you anyway. He'll listen to your story, and he's, you know...
You accept the fact that you have an opinion, you go ahead and have it, but it's essential to meet your God that you love so much.
But, yeah, I read, you know, and I kind of want to get your, like you mentioned, you know, Mardi Gras and, you know, flashing boobs and stuff. I mean, some things kind of take on their own persona and kind of develop in a certain way and go, but like, for example, I know that like back in the 20s and 30s, the French Quarter and that whole touristy area of New Orleans was kind of a slum.
Yeah.
It was where old, you know, where writers would go and get drunk and they could get anything and they could whore it up and right. whatever. And it kind of, you know, the city kind of cleaned it up.
Yeah, for revenue. That's how they make their money.
Like in the 50s and 60s. But, I mean, it wasn't always this.
Was it a touristy area to go to?
And things like voodoo, you know, the world used to be quite a bit more religious than it is now. America used to be a lot more conservative, a lot more religious than it is now. Even if on the surface, but truly, people were, I don't want to say, they were more shocked by things such as voodoo and carnival and those sorts of things. It shocked the sensibilities.
It wasn't as accepted by the public.
So what's your impression, again, coming from a rural place where voodoo is real, practiced as an actual religion, so to speak, or at least as a cultural, you know, a part of culture, to where when you walk down the street and it's kind of being either made fun of or exploited for gain?
I think a lot of people look at, you know, what a lot of people look at New Orleans with, as far as what voodoo is and the practice and everything. People from South Louisiana don't look at it as the same thing that they do in everyday life with healing people and with just some of the superstitions. It's a different thing. You know, there's voodoo and then there's what we do.
Okay.
So the stuff, honestly, the stuff that we see in New Orleans, that just my personal opinion, it's all movie fantasy stuff. You know, enjoy it. It sells to the tourists and everything, but this is the stuff that we do over here. You know, and that's pretty much the way it is. Since I've grown up, that's how
it's been. It's the impression that I get, too.
New Orleans is looked at by a lot of rural Louisiana. It's just, it's a tourist place. It's a tourist place.
Yeah.
You know, it's not real Louisiana. You know, French Quarter is not real Louisiana. It's going to offend a whole lot of people from New Orleans because they feel as though they are truly representative of Louisiana. But, like, Creole food, in my opinion, you can't get Creole food in New Orleans.
No.
You have to go to the Lafayette area, South Louisiana. New Orleans does not represent Louisiana to people from South Louisiana.
Right. I still love it.
Oh, yeah. I worked out of New Orleans on a cruise ship for 2.5 years. I spent a lot of time partying in New Orleans. Love visiting New Orleans. Love partying in New Orleans. I would never live in New Orleans. I could never do that. But
see, if I won the lottery, if I got the Oprah money, I would buy an apartment right there on Bourbon. Just
Trent Reznor used to have a great penthouse there.
Uh-huh. I mean, I don't want to necessarily live there, but I would definitely visit a lot.
Place to visit, yeah, it's fun to visit.
But I'd put a place in lots of places. But you know, it's that allure. There's something about.
Now, have you ever taken in non-French Quarter places?
Well, the second to last time we went there, my wife was pregnant, and so she couldn't drink. And when she couldn't drink, I was not as compelled to. So we actually took some city tours, and we got out of the quarter and went and looked at some of the cathedrals and stuff. So we have been out and around. And,
okay, because there's some excellent restaurants and bars and everything away from the French Quarter. Mm-hmm. One place you can get, you know, good Creole food in New Orleans is Dookie Chases, which I don't know if you ever heard of that, but there used to be a television show. I can't remember the name of the show, but the black guy from Barney Miller. What was his name? He starred in this series on CBS for a while, and that was based on Dookie Chase's restaurant.
Was it a reality show?
No, it was a series. It was a comedy that was on. It was a long time ago, but it was after Barney Miller. But that's a very good restaurant to go to, and there's tons of different places you can check out in New Orleans. A lot of fun, and the plantation homes around the area. You know, once you leave outside New Orleans, St. Francisville has some great places. There's a lot of cool stuff. Even cool places to hike, man. Tunica Hills. We used to go hiking there when I was young. They actually have waterfalls and everything that you can hike through and stuff. It's pretty cool.
Well, I think what we need to do, once we get some of our paperwork filled out and we can write this off as an expensive business.
Somebody we can go down there and interview, man, I'm sure.
Well, we can go find people to interview. we can go eat some of the real food and, you know, because, I mean, my love affair with Louisiana is I never really went there before I was like 18 years old, but when I turned 18, the drinking age in Louisiana was still 18. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I told you the story before.
I used to have friends would come down for spring break to Louisiana because they could drink when they were 18.
Right. But so my buddy Chris from Dudes and Beer podcast, his family is from Mamou.
Okay. Oh, Lord. You have ever been to Fred's?
Dude. I don't know, man. I haven't been back there since I was like 18 or 19 years old. It was right after I turned 18. And this dude's like, yo, man, let's go let's go spend a weekend at grandma's. I'm like, why do I want to go spend a weekend at your grandma's house? And he's like, drinking age in Louisiana is 18 years old, bro. I'm like, okay, because he's like 2 or 3 months older than me, but you know, we're buddies in high school and everything. So we go over there, and lesson number one is they shouldn't be able to sell. I mean, anybody should be able to sell anything to anyone that they want. Like, I'm against regulations, but 18-year-old kids should be advised heavily against being able to buy Southern Comfort by the gallon in the convenience store. When you go in and pop in for a pack of smokes, that dude should at least, like, look at you funny whenever you're trying to buy a gallon of that rot gut shit.
That's so sweet.
So, yeah. So we start drinking on that stuff at his grandma's house. His grandma's badass. I mean, you know, she passed away several years ago, but you know, she's like super cool. She has no problem with these drunk teenagers just chilling in her house.
And a lot of people with grandmas are like that.
But she's just like straight up old grandma too. Like, she's got the grandma dress and she's got the grandma house.
Got food to eat all the time.
She's got doilies and stuff. And so I get just shit canned on Southern Comfort. And throw up in her flower bed and go lay down on the bed, and I'm like, the world is spinning. Like, it was one of the worst drunks I have ever been in my life, and it was like when I was 18 years old. And at some point Chris comes and he's like, dude, come on, we gotta go out drinking. And I'm still like spinning on the bed. I'm like, go without me, I'm not going out. He's like, oh, get up, eat some of grandma's gumbo and you'll be good to go. Go in there, look in the pot, and it's all greasy. You know, it's like it's full on homemade. You know, deep so. You know, it's Louisiana gumbo.
It's gumbo,
and it's all greasy. And I'm just like, I can't stomach that. And his grandma, she didn't say the words, but it was kind of like, don't be a bitch. Man, I hate that stuff. Sobered up, headache went away. I was like, shit, where are we going? Let's go drink. So, I mean, I've been loving it since, you know, but like the food, you know, as much as I can, if we try to find a restaurant around here that it's, you know,
authentic
as right. much as possible.
There's a joint called Fred's in Mamou that I have walked out into the sunlight many, many times. Yeah, to just seeing the sunrise on the way home.
Well,
Fred's is a crazy place, man.
Maybe we need to talk to Chris. I'll be out of action for most of February, but Mamou has a kind of a pre Mardi Gras thing.
Oh, yeah,
like, well, ugly day.
The Mardi Gras season starts 2 weeks before Mardi Gras. So,
yeah.
And Mamou actually has a real big Corps de Mardi Gras, which is a running of the chicken.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of fun. A lot of areas have them, there are a lot of different cities, but Mamou has the biggest one by far.
So we need to talk to Chris, and maybe we can sponsor out a trip.
I don't know if you ever heard of the running of the Mardi Gras, the Corps de Mardi Gras, but essentially what it is, a bunch of costume guys that, and it is, for lack of a better way to describe it, it's almost like a very colorful KKK outfit that they wear. Cone hats, all kind of colors and everything. Going horseback, house to house, gathering ingredients for a gumbo. And one of the things they do is people throw a live chicken out there. And these drunk guys on horseback have to run around to catch this chicken. One of the funniest things you've ever seen, man. And it goes on for several hours. You ride around getting stuff for your gumbo. Then find a place to park everybody and start cooking and dancing and drinking and carrying on. So it's a lot of fun.
So, sounds like it. So, Chris... when are we gonna go see? When are we gonna go hang out in Mamou? We gotta get out there. It's been, you know, we get Ricky to come in, and you know, we'll have a little reunion of sorts out in Mamou. So and think of some people we can interview. We can interview some folks for Dudes and Beer. We can do some stuff for the Scary Dad podcast.
Oh yeah.
There's probably plenty of celebrities that live in New Orleans. It's got a pretty good
New Orleans and areas there. Around there, just in general, man. Louisiana has a real big movie business, man. In Lafayette area, they film a lot of stuff. And in North Louisiana, they've been filming a lot, too. I don't know if you ever remember a movie called Electric Mist, starring Tommy Lee Jones.
Mm-mm.
He was a detective. James Lee Burke wrote a bunch of books in my hometown. He's from New Iberia, Louisiana. And novels, I can't remember the name of the detective involved in him. One of his books was Electric Mist. And they made a movie starring Tommy Lee Jones. And the dock for it is at my old fishing camp.
Oh, cool.
We ended up getting it on the cheap and set up an extra dock at my camp to fish off of. So that was pretty cool. We had a little plaque we made saying it was in the movie and everything. So it was pretty
awesome.
Neat. But yeah, there's a lot of... The film industry is huge down there, man.
Yeah. There's I'm trying to think of who else, like, we just got to Google celebrities that look. Right. I mean, because I remember when we went on that city tour, they're like, well, that was Nick Cage's house, and Anne Rice bought that house from him, and he had to sell off his Action Comics number one for like $1 million because he's so broke. And it's like,
I've always had some great celebrity just meetups in New Orleans. That one of the best was an interview with a vampire. A friend of mine was an extra, and he called some of us up, and he said, hey, come on down. There's Pat O'Brien's, I'm sure you've heard of. Mm-hmm. In the back is a place called Pat-O's Annex, which is a little itty-bitty hole-in-the-wall bar that has a hallway connecting it to Pat-O's. So most of the locals go to the Annex. So he said, meet us at the Annex, and a friend of mine from the movie's going to be there. And it was Christian Slater. He just wanted to hang out with some locals and everything. He didn't want to be with everybody else. And we walk in, and there's a guy in a baseball cap and a jacket in the corner of the bar just with his head down drinking. And he looks up, and I'm like, holy shit, it's Christian Slater we're hanging out with tonight. And he was a cool dude, man. He gave us some good stories about some of the other celebrities, because that was right when River Phoenix died. Mm-hmm. So he was laying it out there, man, letting us know who in Hollywood was on drugs back then. And some really interesting folks, he was saying, were bad on coke at that time, man.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Folks you would never guess, man. It was pretty wild.
You know, Andy Richter, you know, Conan O'Brien's sidekick, he was talking one time, and Conan was joking around with him and was like, you know, does it ever bother you that you're in that chair and not this chair? And Andy was like, well, you see, you get to see their face. I get to lean back like this, and I get to see how much they've tightened their faces over the last little while. You know, the scar gets a little bit bigger. That little skin behind their ear gets more bunchy. And I'm like, and he's like, and you never can tell. I was like, wow.
That's the inside information.
You get the inside information sitting in this chair. But yeah, man, we need to get down to the bayou.
Yeah, that'd be a good trip, man.
We went there for my 40th birthday for 5 days, and we hit it hard, man. New Orleans, like the first 2 days, and then New Orleans punched back.
We
got heartburn, we got hungover, got tired.
Some of the stories I have of being in OPP, Central Lockup in New Orleans, for public drunkenness is not a good time, man.
I can imagine.
A friend of mine, remember one night he got hit in the head, over the head, with a beer bottle by a stripper at one of the clubs there, and the bouncers just dragged him out in the street and left him on the sidewalk with his head bleeding there.
Well, I told you about that crazy lady that was bleeding into her shirt.
Yes, you did tell me about that.
I wrote about that on the blog. That was just bizarre. I mean, like, from like a 2-inch cut right across the bottom of her chin, and she's got this Joker smile, and she's bleeding just profusely into her shirt. Like, hitting on me in a bathroom, in a men's room. Like, are you okay? Oh, yeah. I'm like, oh, shit.
You almost guarantee she was smoking Click'ems, because they were real big, real popular back then, so.
So, yeah, I've had my moments in New Orleans, but I still love it.
Oh, yeah, I'd
go back and give her a high five for that crazy story.
Can't help but love it, man. Yeah. Even after being arrested and everything out there, I still went back many, many times. You can't keep me away.
Well, let's make plans for that. That's probably going to call us an episode on voodoo. So, we're done here. As always, push the buttons. Like, follow, share.
Write us.
Instagram.
If you want some spells to cast on people, just give me a write. But I'll give you a fair warning that, you know, it's not always a good idea to cast so many spells. But I can help you out, whether it be your love life or get rid of an enemy, whatever you want to do.
Tell us what you like, what you don't like. Hit all the buttons. That is our solicitation. So, until next time, keep it scary.
Later.
Can't sleep at night. Grab your telephone. Something just ain't right. That's evil. Evil is going on wrong. I am warning you, brother. You better watch your happy home. Well, long way from home and can't sleep at all. You know another mule is kicking in your stall. That's evil. Evil is going on wrong. I am
me home.
Smoking after you half the whole boat.
That's evil. Evil is going on wrong. I am warning you, brother. You better watch your happy home.
To your house, knock on the front door, run around to the back, you'll catch him dead before he goes.
That's evil, evil.